Monday, July 16th, 2018. It's LA Podcast.
LA Podcast. Hayes Davenport. Scott Frazier. Alyssa Walker?
What?
Back again. Second time in three episodes?
Everybody demanded it.
We're so excited to have you back.
Maybe I never left. You don't. I could have been here the whole time. Yeah. You don't know.
This week was fight week in LA. It wasn't announced ahead of time, but that is what it ended up being. A lot of fights.
Brawls on the street.
Big one last night between the Proud Boys.
Defend Northeast Los Angeles.
Yeah. This was a really crazy bad thing that happened in Atwater Village last night at the Griffin. There was a group of Proud Boys, a hate group run by former Vice editor Gavin McInnes, that they met at the Griffin.
Yep.
They wore their uniforms. They wore the Make America Great Again hats. They have their little polo shirts that they wear. And they got in, and some people found out that they were there and organized a big group to come, like, respond to them, get them out. And the Griffin seemed to kind of take the side of the Proud Boys.
Well, so based on what I read, it sounded like, right, so Josh Androsky was posting about this on Twitter, I think essentially as it was happening.
Yeah, and they noted went, DSA ruffian, Josh Androsky.
Northeast LA defender, went out and they basically went to security and were like, you have a group of essentially like white nationalists, white separatists here in your bar. And the security guard was basically like, hey, not my problem.
He said, the only color I see is green.
Right. Which I don't
the
even know
if that
really applies.
The only nationalism I ascribe to is green nationalism.
Not easy being a green nationalist.
A bunch more people showed up. They got the entire bar shut down. Ultimately,
the cops showed up.
There was a scuffle. Lots of people today posting negative Yelp reviews on the Griffin's Yelp page.
And positive. It's one of
a
those.
A couple, yeah, and some positives too. Yep, that's right. Eventually, the Griffin apologized, sort of. They said that the situation was mishandled, but they also said kind of that they wouldn't have done anything differently. Necessarily. I think they said they wouldn't have let people in if they had known who they were, which they didn't. Yeah. But once they were in, they said their policy is just to kill them with kindness until they leave. So this is just an interesting question with that I guess every restaurant, every like public place has to figure out. How do you deal with groups like this when they come into your restaurant, bar, whatever it is?
Yeah, the response seemed to me very much like they did not want to be involved one way or the other, which seems to actually line up. It was kind of like they were trying to distance themselves from the response over the weekend, but that actually seems like the written statement really aligns with what they did, which was try to not take a side in the moment.
And he also, in the same comment on Facebook, the owner said that the two bouncers that night were... One was African-American and one was gay.
Yeah.
So there's no way they would have let in somebody who...
If they knew that they were there to...
To make trouble.
Right. I mean, you know, and I believe that they wouldn't let in people dressed in, like, SS regalia. But this is a group that is actively Islamophobic, anti-women, and they're violent. They're openly violent. So I think you do have to... Basically, take the policy that you would have for people.
Well, he specifically said
his policy.
He said the policy that he applies, the kill him with kindness policy, applies to gang members or other people he knows to be violent.
Right, but I don't think that would apply to people who were wearing like swastikas on their t-shirts.
Right.
You know, like I think that those people would just get.
But do you also, if you knew somebody was a gang member, the idea would be to kill them with kindness when they came into your establishment? I still don't understand the policy. I mean, I really...
It was basically like, if you're there and you're a member of a hate group, they're not going to say anything about it.
Yeah.
But if you're if you're there to like have an official... It was kind of like, if you're there to have an official meeting, then they don't want you to do that sort of thing. But it was very tepid language. I think the most important thing to note here is that we haven't seen a lot of... this kind of skirmish that went down two nights ago in LA so far. But this has happened actually pretty regularly in other cities, notably in Portland earlier this summer. They've had multiple like very violent altercations actually between like groups like Patriot Prayer,
yep.
the Proud Boys, and essentially like leftist members of DSA and Antifa groups in Portland there. And so now it is apparently something that we are seeing here in Northeast LA too.
And there was a report in LA Taco, actually at Highland Park Brewery, there was another one of these meetings of Proud Boys, but no one knew at the time that they were there. It was only later that people were saying that there was this group meeting at Highland Park Brewery. It's interesting that this is all happening in Highland Park, Atwater,
there was apparently an LA Weekly, before the LA Weekly changed ownership, there was an investigation about why specifically these groups had like set up camp in Atwater of all places.
Yeah.
There was like an investigation that has been cut short. So maybe we...
Yeah, I'm sure they're still working on finishing that investigation over at LA Weekly. And in fact, probably allocating more resources to it now than they were under the last owners.
Once they get done with the bullies who are trying to stifle their own speech, I'm sure they'll get right on that.
That's right. It's a tough thing, because then it's like, if like you take the same policy and you expand it to like gang members and like having to police like people that are showing up.
You're basically doing profiling of anybody that walks in the door. So
right.
profiling based on someone's outfit, right?
Yeah.
So that is like a very typical gang tactic.
And that a lot of bars have tried to do.
You hear a lot of bouncers, talking about.
No long t-shirts, no... Right.
Yeah, no like, white t-shirts.
Yes.
Yeah, you have all these rules, so...
But I think the answer kind of is yes. If you know that this is a group of white nationalists coming into your bar, I think the policy is, obviously, you just say, sorry, we don't.
We're not interested in your business. I think Alyssa brought up a really great point, though, which is like, to what extent is... to what extent can you really expect a private business owner to know that this is something that are all these people wearing the same thing? I wouldn't even probably notice, to be honest, until it became evident that, oh, all these people are in their Trump regalia and they're doing whatever it is that they're doing in the bar.
Sure.
They said they weren't doing anything. So, you know, how much do you expect a bar owner to know in advance? But I think it's a lot more reasonable to expect, once they are informed, to take some sort of action.
Yeah.
I also want to point out one of the site was, or the, I don't know if it was a Yelp or some kind of review, a bunch of positive reviews showed up today. And one of them was that this looks like a Harry Potter bar.
It looks like Harry Potter's
like
living room.
Harry Potter, yeah, Harry Potter's living rooms.
When he lived in the closet?
Yeah, did I? But like the design of the, I will say the bar itself, if you've been to this bar, it has a very specific Euro dungeon, medieval Euro dungeon, perhaps, aesthetic.
It is kind of where a Eurocentric, who wants to kind of get back to
proud
a
Western
certain way of chauvinism. Western, yeah, maybe someone who's really into the Crusades.
Okay.
Like, the kind of place that they might go. What if that was also like a sneaky bad review that someone put on to make people not want to go? I don't want to go to a bar that looks like Harry Potter's living room.
Right.
Okay, next fight. A lot of lawsuits. LA Times involved in multiple lawsuits this week. They're suing the mayor's office. They're suing the city.
They're suing the city.
They want information on how much the mayor is spending on his many trips out of state to states like Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada. In that order.
Yep.
Why?
Why is he going to
those
places?
Those are great places to visit. Don't get me wrong.
The Times is saying that the city is guilty of violating the California Public Records Act and also the state constitution, because one of their reporters, Dakota Smith, has made multiple requests over the past 6 to 8 months for basically all of the security costs, publicly funded security costs for these trips. All of which have been denied so far.
Yeah, by LAPD, which I guess I didn't really realize that the mayor's security detail is LAPD.
Yep, and the article actually says that after LAPD declined the I think, initial request. Then they actually ran the request through the mayor's office and were told that they would get a response, but then subsequently it was declined. LAPD, for their part, and I think the mayor's rep who spoke to Dakota Smith said some version of the same thing, was saying that they couldn't release the dollar amounts because it would endanger potentially the mayor and his family.
Yeah. That's the first thing you do when you're plotting against the mayor. First thing you do is figure out how much the security team's hotel room costs.
Yeah.
What their airfare is, their per diem.
Public
these
records
are all
requests.
Very dangerous things that, yeah. that could get if in the wrong hands.
Notoriously, public records requests are the purview of dangerous criminals who are yeah. trying to plot out really complicated terrorist acts, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I get an email every day telling me where the mayor is going to be the next day as part mm-hmm. of being a journalist as that gets updates from the mayor's office. So I will say sometimes it says where he's going in a different, it says everywhere he's going in LA or he has no public events. Sometimes it says where he's going in a different place, in a different state, different city. And sometimes it just says he will travel out of town and be back in town by this day.
Yeah.
So sometimes you know ahead of time and sometimes you don't.
So the Times actually has put together a report basically saying
on
that
what they
basically yeah. saying with the same information that you're talking about, yeah. saying that he was gone for like 4 months out of the previous 12 months. So the mayor has been out of town a lot, which is part of their motivation for wanting to figure out how much is this actually costing taxpayers and are taxpayers okay with the amount that it's costing them.
But the big variables are
the number of people in security detail.
Are they flying? What class different people are flying in? I mean, this is the big deal of the federal government. I mean, theoretically, it's even a bigger deal with city government.
Yep.
I mean, like, how expensive are the places where the mayor is staying? Does that mean the security detail also needs very expensive hotel rooms? You know, this stuff adds up.
The Times has pointed out, though, that, as you said, we get this information actually about federal officials pretty routinely. And they're notably higher risk for these kind of
you know,
terrorist attacks or whatever violence the LAPD might be claiming that it's putting Eric Garcetti and his family at risk for. But it's fairly routine for reporters to ask for and be provided with dollar amounts. It's hard to make the case, and the Times is saying that they didn't really make the case that those monetary amounts would actually endanger Garcetti.
So. Especially after the fact, because I understand why sometimes they might not say where he's going ahead of time.
Oh, sure.
And then, yeah.
But I mean,
I think they are providing more or less where he's going. They're just not saying how much it's costing.
So. But there's an obvious reason. I mean, the reason why this is happening is because he doesn't want a dollar amount floating around for people to cite and like saying that he's spending this much money on a presidential campaign. I mean, I think it's a pretty nakedly political decision. Also, Alyssa, I'm sure you got the email the other. I mean, it's public now. It went all over the place. Reporters got an email this past weekend during the heat wave that Garcetti was going out of town, but it put an embargo on that information, right? It said don't release that this is happening.
I mean, that's not the email that I got. I don't know if I'm
they
not
thought
on
they knew you
list.
Would they knew you would narc.
But I think sometimes a lot of the information we do get is embargoed, and a lot of the information about events happening the next day are embargoed, so maybe it was a surprise.
Yeah. I feel bad
for beloved family member's birthday. Oh, and what if the media had revealed that he was leaving town?
I feel bad for Garcetti because there was, as you said, there was this previous thing where he was like, hey, reporters, please just don't mention that I'm going to be out of town for a couple of days. I'll be back soon. And then a few weeks before that, even Garcetti went over to, I don't know if you saw this on Instagram or Twitter or wherever it was, but there was this picture of him at the Times offices the day of the sale, the day the sale was finalized.
Yeah.
And he was like popping champagne with them.
Yeah.
So he's like over out here trying to really curry favor with the newsroom. And then he gets slapped with this lawsuit.
Yeah. The other LA Times lawsuit is even more interesting. They published an article yesterday. A really wild article that everyone should read. And it's by Aline Chekmadian, I think is how you pronounce her last name. It's about a Glendale police officer, former spokesman for the Glendale Police Department, who was basically a double agent for the Mexican mafia, was telling them when the cops were coming for gang members. They sending texts that said things like "Your boy Bouncer is next up" was one of the texts. So tell them to leave town or whatever. Telling them what weed growing operations the police were about to hit. So I believe the gang members could hit them first. Lots of pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
So, but the lawsuit is surrounding the reporter published information in the article about the plea deal that this Glendale police officer had worked out with a judge. This was a plea deal that was supposed to be a secret, and it was accidentally published to Pacer, which is the public records server for all court documents. So, secret plea deal. They just put it up by accident, and she saw it. It was all public, and she published it.
Yeah.
And a judge said, you can't publish that. Take it out of the article. Court order to remove it from the article. And now the LA Times did do that, but they're appealing the ruling. They're saying it's unconstitutional. Information that was once public and was published in the newspaper is always public.
Yeah, it's not the burden of the newspaper to pretend like, oops, I didn't see that.
Now, Alyssa, do you have any experience working for an organization that has been sued into oblivion for publishing things that...
Which just got bought at auction this week, by the way. Did you see that Gawker got... Gawker.com
Gawker.com.
Yeah, to the Bustle guy. Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a lot of what happened at Gawker when I was there before I was at Curbed. A story, not a judge ordered story to be taken down. I think at first the estate of, or the representation of Hulk Hogan,
Terry Bollea,
who did get a cut of the Gawker sale, by the way, if you,
oh cool,
in this, right, yeah, okay, we'll go back to that. But there was a sex tape that was published on Gawker.com, and they tried to get it taken down, and Gawker was very adamant, like, once it's published. And it was also in other places. It wasn't like the only place it was on the internet, which it's the same thing you face now in places. If something's up on the LA Times, other blogs have picked it up. It's all over social media. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like it's like something you can just retract and like it goes away. And then that went to a very famous court case where they tried to sue Gawker into oblivion, and technically succeeded, and he won a lot of money, and he also won any future stake in the company. So when that when Gawker.com got sold at auction this week, he got, I think, 45% of it.
Whoa.
So he made money off of
the
site. It wasn't that much money after all, because it's been a few years, and
yeah,
I think it just sold at auction. But anyway,
the brand is not strong.
But it was. but the big thing, I think, for the big battle for journalism and, you know, First Amendment and all these other things we're talking about, is once something's out there in public, especially in an age where it can be picked up by any other outlet, you can't really take it back.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really order it to be taken back.
And this would be the equivalent of Hulk Hogan projecting his sex tape like onto a blimp.
This is the same thing. If these are Pacer documents, which we all use as journalists to try to get this kind of information, we use public information requests, just like you're talking about, same thing that they're trying to do to get the mayor's security detail information. It's out there. I mean, however you get it, sometimes judges have to unlock documents for journalists. And so this is a perfect example of when those are used in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't see the article when the plea deal information was in it, and I don't want to get a court order to shut down my independent podcast, so I probably wouldn't say it anyway. But I wonder if it is something like it was a plea deal for this police officer to cooperate as an informant against the Mexican mafia or something like that, and they spend months and months like getting this guy to turn and like wear a wire or something, and then they make this plea deal and then accidentally post it to the public records office,
which, I mean, you know, it's kind of like Just because you're super incompetent, like, I don't know how, however it breaks down, that's, somebody is very...
Incompetence on some, is involved in some level.
Somebody's very incompetent, and I don't see how that justifies, like, forcing the press to, like, just pretend like it just didn't happen.
Yes.
But they did, they took the story down. The story's still up.
Part of it about the plea deal is down, and there's a correction
pending the appeal.
Pending the appeal, but they did follow the court order and then sued.
I don't know. I don't agree. I don't agree with that.
Oh, you think they should have left it up?
Yeah.
New ownership. I'm wondering if he's like, maybe we wait a little bit. So
I think you should fight it. I think these are perfect places for us to fight against what has been an attack on the press and people who are not sympathetic to the Democratic way are going to see this as fake news, attack the press, another way to silence people who are doing great journalism. So I think it sets a bad precedent.
They have to move. They're moving this weekend. Yeah. They're so busy.
They're gonna save journalism and move in the same weekend.
Speaking truth to power since 1885 will resume. In a couple months, basically.
Next fight. There was a lawsuit in the city of Santa Monica.
Yep. Okay. Well, this is
wasn't about scooters. Somehow,
we're getting there. This is a slow rolling
scooter jump.
Yeah, it was actually. You got to kickstart three times before the lawsuit will actually take off. So Santa Monica is being sued by an attorney in Malibu who is basically accusing the city of Santa Monica of violating the California Voting Rights Act. So basically, the California Voting Rights Act says that if a minority group in a city in California can establish that voting is racially polarized in their city, so white voters vote for white candidates, Hispanic voters vote for Hispanic candidates, etc., and also that the any minority group in the city has been denied their right to influence the outcome of the election, the city can be forced to change its voting system in order to remedy that. This has mostly impacted cities that have so-called at-large elections, where everybody in the municipality is responsible for voting for all of the, for instance, city council members. In Santa Monica,
it's not dictated by district or whatever. Yeah. Everyone votes for everyone.
So in Santa Monica, if you're a resident of the city of Santa Monica, you'll vote for no more than four city council members.
And don't they rotate who's mayor?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty common for the like city manager council system that they have for smaller cities, basically like that. Santa Monica is saying that they do not want to change their voting system. They want to stay with the at-large system.
And what is the situation that is being sued over?
So basically, Santa Monica is being sued by a group of Hispanic activists in the Pico neighborhood in Santa Monica.
The attorney's in Malibu, but the group is in Santa
Monica. This attorney has actually basically started a sort of like a little cottage industry of suing cities all over the state of California on behalf of minority groups.
Okay.
Most recently, I believe he forced the city of Palmdale to switch to district elections, which Palmdale fought and lost at a cost to them of like $5 million.
Wow.
Palmdale is not a very wealthy city, so that was kind of debilitating to them.
Sure.
So basically where we are this week is the current mayor, Ted Winterer, and the former mayor...
Ted Loser.
Ted Winter.
But it sounded like you said Winter.
Gleam Davis. They wrote an op-ed in Thursday's Times saying that they're standing up on principle and fighting this lawsuit because they don't think it's fair. Cities like Palmdale, basically every city that has fought one of these cases has lost.
Yeah.
The League of California Cities has said that the bar is unreasonably and unachievably high for cities to prove that they're not in violation of the California Voting Rights Act. So Santa Monica is saying, we've got the money and we're going to fight against this. Yep.
It's the same thing as like when we're like voting for in the primaries and things like we are, and even for the president, our vote doesn't count
right.
as Californians in many ways. It's yes. this idea of feeling like your vote doesn't count.
Yeah.
Which is increasingly concerning as people are moving into cities, and smaller cities have definitely other challenges than, you know, a giant city like Los Angeles. But I think there was an amazing statistic that like the most of the U.S. population is only going to live in 8 states.
Yeah.
Soon.
Right. Really soon.
So, and most of them obviously in cities, as it has already been the trend.
But
so
they'll have less than 20% of right. the Senate.
So, but yeah, what we do doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And, so I think that is a lot of why we don't see higher turnout and why we don't see a lot more interest
yeah.
in any election because yeah. we feel that way.
And you've talked about this. The promise of LA was basically every little community could come and get its own little patch of land yep. where they could kind of self-determine.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing it in the neighborhood council votes that we talked about. We're seeing it in small cities. There are groups that are represented by people who they don't feel represent them.
Absolutely.
And that was sort of what LA said you could do yes. when you showed up.
We're at a moment of reckoning for that philosophy from a very wide perspective in LA. And this is actually an important moment. This lawsuit is probably fairly important because a lot of cities actually that get sued based on the California Voting Rights Act just choose to say, okay, we'll change our system and
yeah.
don't because they don't want to fight it.
Very the Palmdale, I'm sure, scared everyone.
I don't think that anybody who's actually fought it has won outright.
Yeah, but to hear Santa Monica saying $5 million, yeah, we can.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what they're saying.
Just charge more for scooters. We can cover that.
Santa Monica is saying that they believe their city is integrated. They believe their city is represented by a significant number of minority individuals, and
yeah.
they are willing to risk fighting it in order to try and force the state's hand and get
gotcha.
A change essentially to the Voting Rights
huh.
Act.
Yeah. No more fights. Only good news from now on. California had these carbon emissions goals that they set. When did they set these goals? A few years ago. Alyssa, do you remember?
Oh God, a long time ago.
06?
Yeah,
oh, six. It was
yeah,
during Schwarzenegger's administration.
Yeah, it was at least 10 years ago.
They said by 2020... we're going to get to 1990 levels of carbon emissions. You remember?
Such a Schwarzenegger move, if you think about
take
it.
Turn the clock back to 1990, yes. baby.
It really is.
When things were good. That was between T2 and T1.
Yeah.
It probably, that's like when he looks at pictures of himself then, that was like peak.
Turn back the clock.
Physical yeah. power.
Shows like, up to himself yeah. in 1990. Come with me if you want to live.
And so they met the goals in 2016. California, yep. we did it.
Yeah.
We did it.
We got back to 1990 levels 4 years early. Now we have more goals for 2030. Supposed to do like a 40% reduction from there.
Yep.
So good. We must be on pace. It must be very easy to, you're shaking your head, but as a podcast, you have to say no.
No, Hayes, no.
Why not? Why do you worry about people getting complacent?
Well,
with
that's
this
part
news?
Of it. Yeah. I feel like just don't ever tell anybody that. But also, they said that transportation is still a huge and growing concern. And we have to work on that next.
Transportation emissions went up in this period that we were measuring, while all in general emissions went down.
And the lines actually crossed during this period.
Yep.
So if you think of how we use coal plants, we don't really use that many of those anymore. We've switched to a lot of renewable sources. But at the same time, we've been driving more and moving further apart from each other and places we need to go. And so the lines, if you look at the graph, like the, you know, energy generation line goes down, but the line of transportation emission goes up and they crossed.
And transportation emissions are, I think, 40% of emissions overall in California.
No.
It's the biggest
yeah.
single.
Largest single. culprit of greenhouse gases.
And so the reason that we were early on the on these goals are power plant regulated, not using coal, like you said. I think the port of LA was a big chunk of it.
Yep, the port actually has reduced both the combined port of LA and port of Long Beach. I think has reduced their emissions something like 75% or something like that. That would should probably go into that at some point, how they've actually accomplished that, but they've significantly reduced a bad situation there.
So, but you would say now that there's no way to reach the next level of goals without getting away from how we use cars.
And there was a meeting that I think a lot of people didn't really follow or, you know, it wasn't widely reported. It was a lot of the accusations because, you know, we're there's not that many of us who report on this stuff and we're kind of busy.
Yeah.
But it was basically like you have to get people out of their cars to achieve this goal. That's the only solution here. And really some like wide-eyed, what, how?
Yeah.
Like really from, you know, at the, this is like state legislators and decision makers and leaders who really didn't even understand this until now or thought that like, getting everybody in electric cars would solve the problem, which is also not true.
It's also not
Why is that not true?
I want Scott to explain it because I feel like I say this all the time. So I want you to say it instead of me because I feel like I want to hear it from someone else. That's not me telling everybody to ban cars.
So I mean, basically, we're in a situation now where you, Hayes, mentioned at the top of this segment that we met this goal in 2016, and it's we're most of the way through 2018 now. We're just finding out about this. We actually have seen the number of.
That's the sound of Alyssa opening her Velcro beer koozie, but I'm going to have one as well.
So since 2016, what has happened is we've actually seen the levels of car ownership in Southern California and across the state in general increase. Transit ridership is decreasing. We have a problem that is actually getting worse, and it's getting worse faster than we can actually diagnose it. So it will be several years before we actually see the impact of the choices that individual Californians are making on the environment. But realistically, an electric car is not actually solving the fundamental, unless you, even if you get everybody into an electric car, you still end up with the high cost of the lifestyle that that requires people to have. If everybody is driving everywhere for every errand that they do throughout the day, going to work, getting their kids, doing all this. Basically like they are now, you're still requiring land use that is untenable. From a basic sustainability standpoint, you're still having the same geometric issues with the use of the freeways that we are now.
Yeah.
The production of cars is obviously a very energy intensive process.
Right.
And basically just the like lifestyle of California sprawl is not sustainable. It doesn't really matter whether those cars are autonomous, whether they're electric. None of it fundamentally changes the fact that we need to reduce our energy consumption. And we've actually seen when the legislature went through and said that they wanted to hit this new mark of 40% below 1990 levels 12 years from now, that requires a remarkable shift in the way that we live and the way that we actually view life in California. That is not just like getting back down to par, which is kind of what this goal was. That's a very aggressive time frame to meet a very ambitious goal.
Right. It seems like they're relying on maybe like technological changes to solve the problem for them, but it's really lifestyle changes that are going to have
a
bigger...
Which can be technological. I mean, I don't think that we shouldn't... I mean, this is the biggest topic. It's car ownership we know is changing. There's a lot of parts that we know are changing. Younger people maybe don't want to drive cars or it's easier to share cars. But the problem remains how many people are in those vehicles and where they're going and how far they're going. So it's the only thing we need to be concerned about.
Yeah. This is crazy. I just checked Elon Musk's Twitter and he just called Scott and you, Alyssa, pedophiles.
I have been spending a lot of time in Thailand lately, so I can see.
As you were saying that, he was building a case for the two of you being pedophiles.
He had like one day where he looked good, and then he like got back on
Twitter.
Which
day was that?
Like, it was like 2 days ago before, like he was giving the money to Flint to like fix their water, and someone had called him out and was like, hey, there's problems here at home. You should solve them. And he had a pretty decent interview in Bloomberg about like, I'm with the people, and then it...
And then pedo boy.
Well, and also that he was the top donor to...
A top donor
to Republican House campaigns, which is...
Garcetti just shouted him out as like a great Angelino for whatever the Sierra Club
was like, let's not focus on who he gives his money
so
to.
Yeah, that was so
he's
sad.
Devoted his
I think
life
they've,
to.
I'm sure they've gotten a lot of money from him too. They probably figure this bought at least one tweet from us. On the emission stuff, I read an article by Orange County moron Joel Kotkin.
No, that's totally warranted, I think.
For City Journal, which is a quote magazine funded by the Manhattan Institute, which is a think tank for sensible conservatives who don't like Trump but want to sterilize welfare recipients, who basically said California only produces 1% of global emissions, which means if California vanished from the face of the earth, it wouldn't make that much difference, which, first of all, 1% is huge. It's very disproportionate compared to how much of the global population we have, which I think is about 0.5%.
Yep.
And it basically gets rid of the whole idea of, forget personal responsibility towards climate change. That's basically like no single nation, what the world should have to do it all at the same time.
There was a plan to do, right? Also.
I've heard of this plan.
I wonder if Joel Kotkin supported that either. But I think it's completely ludicrous to say that California should not pursue climate change goals. And I mean, for the part of the more left-leaning parts of the establishment, the Times editorial board was saying basically this shows that you can expand your economy and also reduce emissions at the same time. But I think basically that's something important to consider is, and that's something that Jerry Brown and other legislators have made frequent reference to, is that California has the opportunity to basically set an example and also help establish the sort of supply chains that will be more sustainable for the future economy.
Yep. Ants, we got a request from listener BJ. He has an ant issue. This is the kind of question I hope we get more. People who have domestic problems.
Yeah.
Let's say household problems. Not domestic.
Listener BJ has no domestic issues. Household concerns, any kind of infestation, we will answer questions about. BJ has ants in his house. He wrote us on Twitter saying, can you please talk about the ants? A lot of people in LA right now, it's summer. This is when the ants come into your house. Other months of the year, they are outside the house. Now they have decided to come inside. Well, it's not. Well, fall and you're doing, you do so many.
Alyssa really wants to jump in here.
Go.
Just so you know, Alyssa is constantly doing facial expressions and hand motions and things
I'm
that
not
the
used
listener
to this.
Is
I'm
never
not used to
privy
this.
To.
I'm not used
Does
to
it
this.
Come through when I'm, you're writing articles?
I'm trying this entire time you've been talking, I've just been trying to remember the plot of the movie Ants, and that's my only contribution to this entire segment.
I can't even remember it. I don't even know.
Kevin
Spacey was the bad guy.
Woody Allen was the good guy.
Whoa.
Wow.
We need to revisit that on a future episode.
Ants is canceled. go talk about ants.
Okay, so ants. You will see them in LA when it's super hot, But you'll mm-hmm. also see them when it's super wet outside.
Okay. So when it's...
This sounds like some kind of Alice in Wonderland limerick like or something, yeah. right? So okay, here's the two things. So the ants that are most annoying to listeners like BJ and other people are Argentine ants. They are an invasive species like mm-hmm. we have many of here in Los Angeles. And they keep their homes in very dry areas. So... if you have a heat wave coming to your house or neighborhood or city, they're going to come looking for water because they can't find it near where they are. So that's why they're going to come in your house. That's why they're going to come near your water sources. They're going to come near your food.
They live outside, I saw. Some...
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. they could live under your house maybe if it was dry. But
they'll come in.
They'll come in looking for those things. And then the reason that you might also see them when it's super wet or, you know, flooding in your area is because their home got flooded because mm-hmm. it was a super dry place that somehow got a ton of water and it's looking to get away from, you know, safety in a dry place. So both of those things, might I mention, very heavy precipitation events mm-hmm. and very devastating heat waves are two of the things that most scientists agree are going to be more common due to climate change, right? So extreme heat is the most dangerous climate-related disaster that is facing basically anyone right now. And you saw this intense heat wave that swept through, not just, you know, we kind of got like a secondary one that went, there was a big one that swept over most of the country. And then we got like a secondary one. Maybe that's when BJ had his woes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a deadly heat wave. In Montreal, I think at least 25 people died just because they were in their, mostly elderly residents died because they were in their apartments. And then you just don't, you don't have a good way of sensing when you actually need help from the heat.
And the biggest, I think some of the worst, most deaths in natural disasters ever were, there was a Chicago heat wave that I think killed something like 40 people.
More people die because of extreme heat than any other natural disaster put together in the United States. So if you think about, like, you hear about hurricanes or earthquakes or all these other things, more people just die because of extreme heat, and heat waves are getting worse.
Did you hear about that happening at all like this past weekend? I wonder if maybe you don't hear about it because it's happening to mostly the elderly who are in their apartments and they're just found later and people just say, oh, natural causes.
I mean, that's what happened in Montreal. That's what was so scary about what happened is they didn't have a really good support system in place. This is what the government came out and said afterwards, that we didn't really know how to check in on all these people because we haven't experienced this kind of heat wave before. I mean, records were shattered in LA, but we kind of have had a few incidences of this before. Like maybe people get the message or they know to go to cooling centers or whatever. But in some of these cities where, you know, people aren't prepared for this kind of heat, and LA is one of them. A lot of people don't have air conditioners here mm-hmm. and a lot of people turn them on, which is why a lot of power might have gone out in your neighborhood. But if you're not prepared for this, and if you haven't seen this was a threat before, you don't know where people are going to die in your city. And it's not just like, you know, deaths from a heat wave. It's like the ongoing stress that your body experiences because of these intense heat waves that are going to be more frequent.
Yeah. Now, listener BJ is listening and thinking like, I'm a question about ants. I want to get rid of my ants in my house.
Well,
this
I would
is
just
not
say,
helping me at all. But I mean, you're saying get used to them.
Well,
befriend
them. I mean, I think
use
like,
them as an energy source.
I think this week what we've learned is for things like traffic. LAist had a great article that was just like, traffic is really bad. Deal with it. So I'm just going to start saying, deal with it.
Yeah. Well, so you were talking about
header should just be, this is life now.
Sorry. You have
basically
ants?
The
you have ants? Deal with
of
it.
That of Joel Kotkin, Orange County Moron article. I was like, basically, like, you know, we have no responsibility for climate change. Just deal with it. This is related to the beer that you brought.
Right.
The
theme, we're all cracking open
the
here.
The theme drink of this episode is the Hazy LA IPA from Golden Road Brewery. So that, obviously, the name implies smog.
Right.
That's different.
InBev should
oh, wait, sorry, wait,
come
wait,
back
wait.
How
is it different?
Run.
Well, there's also another brewery called Smog.
Oh, that's
Smog
right.
City
Smog
brewery.
City. That's right.
We're not going to call them out today. Sorry. But Hazy is different than Smog. But
and they show on the can.
Yeah, it says Hazy LA IPA, and it has this kind of beautiful. I mean, I will say the colorway is kind of nails what it's like. You're driving down the 110
Elysian Park.
Yeah, you got the Dodgers,
towards
Dodgers
downtown.
Stadium, towards downtown. You've got that. You come over through that last tunnel.
This looks like it's like evening where the sky is still pretty bright, but the ground is getting dark. So it's maybe like 7:45 p.m. on
the
a summer
sun,
day.
The sun is behind downtown, so
And there's definitely a Dodger game because there's so many cars.
Yep.
There's only cars. You're on this freeway. And I'm troubled by this image because it's glorifying traffic, which was also, and kind of just saying we can't do anything about it. The sky is hazy and the cars are there. And that was this LA's story, which was the conclusion was that LA's traffic is really bad and there's nothing we can do about it. And literally the headline said, deal with it.
Yeah.
Just deal with it.
Now can I use like another visual reference?
Yes.
You know that like gif with the sunglasses coming down onto the okay, so just envision like the sunglasses dropping down and I'm like deal with
yeah,
it
yeah on a bleached skull from climate. But the beer
with ants crawling
the beer it was good, I should say.
The beer is good and it is Golden
from
Road.
Golden Road, our local brewery owned by Anheuser-Busch InBev.
This is his pitch to InBev right now.
Our Portuguese brewery.
I mean, if you are Golden Road, I guess you should make your beers about roads. I mean,
right, it's built in.
But I would want to see, you know, more about transit or like as Scott mentioned the pedestrian walkway that's along the 110 is not in this illustration.
Totally alighted from the beer can.
We want to do what we promised to do. And I also promised on Twitter this week that we would talk about the sheriff gangs, but that's for an episode later this week.
Yep.
That's going to be a special one. We want to talk these propositions that are on the state ballot. There are 12 of them. We're going to cover 1 and 2 this week. There should be a name for this segment. I didn't think of one. Prop in the Name of Love is not.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know. Alyssa doesn't like it. So this is one of the facial expressions I'm talking about. She grimaced and she shook her head. It's not good, but you have to admit for coming up with it in 1 second. We'll think of a better name. There will be a segment.
Prop,
name.
Drop, and lock it. It's terrible. I would go with the Supremes reference. Anyway, so
propositions 1 and 2.
Prop it like it's hot.
Ooh,
that's pretty good.
We'll keep.
Nobody in this room is shaking their head right now. I just want to say that for the record.
No, I know.
But the sunglasses are dropping down from the sky.
Okay, they're both bonds.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Okay.
What's a bond?
So. A bond is a financing technique that, in this case, a government will use because they want to finance something now and pay for it later.
It's debt.
Basically, bonds are debt. That is a very good way to think of them. A bond will be issued in a certain amount. In this case, it's billions of dollars that will be issued in the form of buyable debt to the public. And to private companies, who will purchase that debt and then get paid back with interest over a period generally of 30 years.
Okay, so what's Proposition 1?
Proposition 1 is called the Veterans and Affordable Housing Bond Act.
Gotta have veterans in there.
2018. Actually, the veterans were added.
Gotta add veterans.
You gotta add veterans. One thing that's important to know about bond measures in California is that the reason why we have so many of them is that for the most part, if you are asking for any sizable amount of bond financing, if the state is asking for any sizable amount of bond financing, the voters are required to give their permission for the state to do that.
Yeah.
So this is something that actually was passed as legislation last year, mm-hmm. As part of the massive landmark housing package that the state legislature worked on. Of 15 housing bills that were signed by Jerry Brown at the end of last September.
Mm-hmm.
And it is $4 billion in bonds that will be paid back out of just the general fund of state revenue over the course of the next 30 years. So the way this breaks down is it's $1 billion for this program called the CalVet Home Loan Fund,
mm-hmm.
which that was the funding that was actually added originally when the bill was written last year. It was $3 billion. They added this extra $1 billion to this program that essentially offers home loans to veterans. That program does not have other funding essentially past the end of this fiscal year, upcoming fiscal year.
They're going to run out of money unless this passes.
So that kind of ties a sort of sense of urgency to passing this bond, aside from obviously the dire need that we're already seeing with the housing crisis as it currently exists. $1.5 billion for low income affordable housing to be constructed throughout the state. And the remainder goes towards various programs that would essentially help local governments plan, construct, and otherwise rehabilitate infrastructure for dense urban infill housing. So that could be, they have some administrative funds for planning transit-oriented districts in local cities. Everybody's favorite buzzword in government.
Yeah.
They have essentially money that could be used to retrofit sewers, parks.
This is a big thing people are concerned about when more people move into a neighborhood, when it's built more densely, that the sewers are going to be just overloaded.
That apparently now the electricity, like apparently now the electrical grid is also getting overloaded.
Yeah.
Some people were saying that the reason we had brownouts and blackouts was because too many people
lived
in dense housing.
Which is not true. It's because it's because people had to run their AC all night because it was 100 degrees at 11 p.m.
Decades old.
Yeah, the transformers audibly explode all around.
You can look at like the neighborhoods that didn't have blackouts. You're like, oh, when did they last fix that? Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the sewers are an oddly large part of the conversations about building apartment buildings. The Frank Gehry building on Sunset over near the border between West Hollywood and Los Angeles.
Sunset and Crescent Heights.
Yeah, West Hollywood, I think, was either like thinking about suing the city of LA basically for like use of their sewer system or something like that. So this is money that would allow local governments to basically rehab the infrastructure that exists and kind of ameliorate some of those concerns.
Yeah. And to his credit, this is the kind of thing that Mayor Garcetti has been fighting for, basically for the state to get in the game on financing affordable housing construction. LA has passed some taxes to get these kind of buildings up. But the mayor has basically said this is the state's responsibility as well, and they should be sending a lot of the money to LA, which presumably they will.
Yeah, one imagines that that absolutely will be the case. We have a large homeless population. We have a large veteran population in Southern California generally. So a lot of this money will probably end up here. Liam Dillon, who covers housing for the LA Times and
does, and has a great podcast called Gimme Shelter,
right?
With Matt Levin from CalMatters. Great, the California Housing Crisis podcast. Great podcast.
Absolutely. Liam Dillon actually wrote about this last year and said that basically, even with the Veterans and Affordable Housing Bond Act of 2018, should it pass, as well as a number of the other pieces of legislation from last year, we're talking about a fraction of the housing production that the state needs to see in order to actually halt the rise in rent prices and housing costs more generally. He also said that when the bond was originally envisioned at $3 billion, that it was expected that it could be all spent in 5 years. So these are really kind of like stopgap things. We've passed housing construction bonds before in the state, Prop 46 in 2002, Prop 1C in 2006. Both of those are gone, depleted at this point.
Yeah.
And that was like $4 billion between them. So
yeah. So the housing that we need has to come from a lot of different places, but it's good that a lot of it is being publicly financed with bonds like this.
Absolutely.
We should say, well, like, should we put the official LA podcast? What's our endorsement for this bill?
I'm a yes.
For this proposition.
I'm a yes on one.
Prop it like it's hot. Prop it like it's hot.
Alyssa's, I think that's a yes. I'm a yes on one, specifically because bonds for construction, generally speaking, make sense. California's finances are in good shape. Our bond financing is not a significant portion of our budget. And essentially, by spending this money now, we reduce the cost that we would incur anyway down the line.
Yeah.
And probably will be a good deal.
Yeah. What's Proposition 2?
Prop 2 is related. It is the No Place Like Home Act of 2018. Cute. Yeah, it's cute, isn't it? This is something that was actually passed by the legislature 2 years ago in 2016, signed by Governor Brown in summer of 2016. However, it has essentially been in limbo since then because this is actually a different kind of bond than the previous one, which, as I mentioned, will be paid out of the general fund of California tax income. This specific bond is $2 billion to be spent on permanent supportive housing construction for individuals with mental illnesses, mm-hmm. and it is intended to use revenues that come from a previous tax, which is called the Mental Health Services Act, and it is at this point unclear whether or not the government actually has the authority to use that revenue to pay for this specific bond issue.
So this was the money that was locked up.
This is the one that passed through the legislature 2 years ago, $2 billion from the mental health services tax for permanent supportive housing for mentally ill people that, correct me if I'm wrong, what the state was sued by one person, by one lawyer.
Yes, in Sacramento.
Who says you should not be able to use mental health services funds for housing. I believe that was her case.
You should not be... Her case is... It's a bit stronger than that. Her case is that the Mental Health Services Act is specifically... is not that housing isn't necessary for mentally ill individuals, but that the Mental Health Services Act was explicitly... put in place to replace dwindling funds for treatment of
treatment,
mental illnesses.
Not housing.
Yes.
And this a judge has not ruled on this.
A judge has not ruled on this. I want to point out the individual that actually issued the lawsuit to start with. Her name is Marianne Bernard, which is really funny because I was trying to like look her up and get a little bit of information about her.
I did this a while ago.
And the whole first page essentially of Google is that that's a pen name that Steven Soderbergh uses.
Oh, right.
So to
for
my
like editing or writing or something. Yeah.
To my knowledge, Steven Soderbergh is not the individual who was suing to stop this bond.
I remember anger Googling this person earlier. But what kind of system is this that you can pass a $2 billion bond for permanent supportive housing and one person can snarl it up enough that now the entire state has to allocate mental resources towards voting on this
thing. Right. So it ends up being basically what happened. Kevin DeLeon authored the original bond legislation, and obviously he's no longer in the Senate, but before.
Obviously, he's being endorsed over Dianne.
That's right. True. That was big news. He was endorsed over Dianne Feinstein.
Another fight
this week.
We failed to.
That was a big fight.
Fight.
So he's no longer in the legislature. But prior to leaving, there came to be a consensus among legislators that essentially they would probably have to end up taking this to voters anyway. So, so rather than
because it's a tax, because
it's a bond,
because it's a bond. Okay.
So basically, what legislators are thinking is the entire basis for the lawsuit is that it is not in keeping with the actual language of the act that was passed by voters. So now, rather than asking voters to approve a bond, they're essentially asking voters to approve the use of this specific funding for financing.
What do we vote on people? Why do we send these people to Sacramento in the first place? If everything that comes up, they're mandated by law to then take back to us and be like, is this okay? Is it okay that we do this? We voted for these people to make decisions. I don't want to then vote again on the decisions that they make. This is so stupid.
And one does imagine that this will be somewhat more confusing for voters trying to figure out what's going on here. Especially as we have voted for a lot of specifically services and funding for construction to serve the homeless in recent years.
It was separated, which is interesting and was very confusing to a lot of people, the difference between H and HHH.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we separated services and construction.
A lot of people were like, why are we voting for this again?
Yeah.
Many people will tell you it's not a separate issue. It was county and city, and you know, there's all these different things that have to do with it, but like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Why are we voting in again?
I think the more that you have to vote on something like this, the more as a voter you're just kind of like, wait,
more of this? I already did this.
How come it's not fixed yet?
Yeah.
You know? So there's that risk, obviously. Interestingly enough, the Mental Health Services Act has kind of been the funding that it brings in is about $1 to $2 billion every year. So mm-hmm. This bond would take about $250 million a year for 7 years, give it to various counties based on their size, and it would be available to them to build permanent supportive housing. But the Mental Health Services Fund has sort of been lambasted by the state auditor because they have not actually been keeping track of how that money is being spent. It's getting it's basically pooling up in local agencies. So one could definitely argue that it's a much better use of that $1.5 billion to actually spend it on construction than to be handing it out to local entities who don't necessarily know what to do with it or are just being irresponsible with it.
Hmm.
I also endorse a yes vote on
yes
this
from
one.
Scott. You say yes on this one, Alyssa?
Well, yeah. I mean, how else are we going to solve all these problems?
Of course.
I mean, these are no-brainers. I think that there's other stuff that you or perhaps me can talk about in future podcasts. If you're going to go through all of them, it'll probably be its own podcast series. We have so many things to vote on.
Sure.
It's really important to tell the public, but I think housing bonds, anything for housing.
Of course. And I'm a huge yes on this, but I think these being propositions does real damage in especially on the same ballot. You have to come back for when we talk about Proposition 6. But if you're going down the list and you say, okay, now I, as a taxpayer, am giving away $4 billion for the homeless services, for $2 billion for this housing. Now I have to pay more money for gas.
Right.
Now I have to be taxed for my gas on the same ballot.
And these are just state.
Yeah, these
measures.
Are just ones that are they state and that don't sound very frivolous. I think a lot of them you're going to go through it and be like, what the hell is
I'm excited
soda?
For some of the more frivolous.
Like there's all these things that are your
neither kinda, of those got on thank god as we talked about last week but
it's good to note though that supporters for the support and opposition, there really actually is no registered opposition at this point
for
it's
either
still kind of early for either
the big supporter financially for Proposition 1 was the Chan Zuckerberg initiative
and
I thought
two as well.
Oh, they donated how much did they donate for
same
two?
Amount
$250,000
for both.
Wow.
And the Building and Trades Council, affordable housing, nonprofits, obviously also lined up in support for
what
this.
What was that face, Alyssa?
Well, I was asking what Elon Musk was going to support as far as the gas tax. We'll talk about that later.
He should be. Gosh. If there's anything that's such
there's
a layup for him
right.
like, to put
it.
His face in front of and say this is vital to meet our climate change goals,
like,
that we do not repeal the gas tax with Proposition 6.
I don't
six.
Use gas in my vehicles. Let's talk about it. I mean, Elon, if you're a listener to this podcast.
Yeah.
He possibly was our first guest. We don't know.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back later this week with a special episode of LA Podcast. Thank you, Alyssa. You have a standing invitation. You come back.
Wow, but I have to stand the entire time. Unfortunately, that's what I'm doing right now. You have no idea how hard it's been.
Bye.